One time Katie was listening to one of these intros and she said, do you guys do the bad acting on purpose? All right. You go ahead. Start.
Okay. Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we watch a movie on the podcast.
What? We watch a movie on a podcast? How does that work?
Well, you know, maybe I didn't think this through.
Cue bad acting.
Okay, so the other day, Patrick, we ventured into the District of Columbia.
We did.
And we did another live event. Mm-hmm. And this one was really different for us. It involved a movie screening and then a conversation about that movie. And we'll get to that in just a second here. But it was at this place called Sun's Cinema.
It's really cool.
How would you describe this place?
It's a place that's really a converted old row house with two movie theaters. I mean, it's amazing what's been done there. And it's very cozy and it's got like, you know, thrift shop kind of furniture in the for the seats. And they got a little bar and a great popcorn machine. It's a really cool place.
It is a really unique experience. And it apparently has been open for a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. And they mostly just show like older movies.
Yeah.
And have it set up like in a room with like all this funky old furniture and stuff like that, but set up in like rows of seats, so it kind of gives it a little bit of a movie theater feel.
You know, showed some previews of two of the weirdest like foreign movies you'll ever not have heard of, and it was really cool.
Apparently it's quite a successful venture that they sell out a lot of nights and
what a
and
fun thing so, different thing to do.
So we worked with Sun Cinema. I want to thank Dave for helping us out there to do a screening of a documentary called Led Zeppelin Played Here by a local filmmaker named Jeff Krulik. Mm-hmm. And listeners might know one of his famous works, which was called Heavy Metal Parking Lot.
That's right.
Which is a short film, I want to say about 20 minutes or so, that you can find on YouTube. Mm-hmm. You can go watch that, where he documents the like heavy metal fan culture at a Judas Priest show in the 80s.
That's right, at the legendary Capitol Center in Landover, Maryland.
And it's become this cult classic.
Yeah.
People love that film. It's really well done. So you can check that out. And then this film, Led Zeppelin Played Here, is a longer, it's about 80 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it's like a more traditional sort of documentary.
Right.
But in the film, he is investigating whether or not Led Zeppelin played a small show at a place called the Wheaton Youth Center in Wheaton, Maryland.
That's right.
In 1969.
That's right.
January of 1969 is according to folklore that they did this. So we'll get into that in just a second here. Okay, we should introduce ourselves.
Yes.
The show is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And again, thanks to Sun Cinema. Thanks to Jeff Krulik for helping us out with this.
Yeah.
So what you guys are going to hear in a minute is the Q&A that we held after the film screening.
Right.
So we interviewed Jeff about this film.
Mm-hmm.
We need to do a little bit of setup here because you're going to hear him refer to some things and you guys have not seen this film because it's actually kind of hard to see. He's going to explain
There's
that.
A reason for that. Yep.
But you're going to get a lot out of this conversation. We can set it up enough for you for it to make sense. So
that's
basically
right.
Some of the things he's going to talk about. The Laurel Pop Festival.
Yes.
So this project started with him exploring an relatively obscure two-day festival that
That's
happened
right.
in Laurel, Maryland with a lot of big names.
Right, at the Laurel Racecourse.
Right around Woodstock time. So he's going to talk about that. So
about 30 days before,
But in working on that, he kind of took this side turn when he started to investigate this question of whether Led Zeppelin played at the Wheaton Youth Center to something around 50 people
That's right.
in January of 1969. Mm-hmm. He got into this because one of the sources in the film he was shooting is this guy who wrote a book called Capital Rock. His name is Mark Opsasnik. Opsasnik. And he published this book in the 90s about the history of DC music.
Right.
And in the book, it references Led Zeppelin playing at the Wheaton Youth Center in 1969. So that's what sort of like got him intrigued by this.
That's what got it started.
And then also, the other thing you need to know is later on in the interview, a couple of things. One thing is he talks about high school concerts.
Yes.
So let's talk about this for a second here, because the movie gets into the fact that at that era, a lot of concerts were staged in what we might now think of as sort of non-traditional venues, but at that time it was very common, right? Mm-hmm. So there's footage in this film, for instance, of James Brown.
That's right.
In the late 60s.
Yeah.
Right. Where he was well known playing in a high school. That's right. In, was it Virginia?
No,
right?
It was in Maryland somewhere. It was in Maryland. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, one of the public schools in Maryland that had just opened a bigger auditorium because the original school's auditorium was too small for James Brown. So that's kind of fascinating, too.
Right.
And also some footage of the Falls Church Community Center where there were many of these concerts as well. Bob Seger and Iggy Pop played there and all kinds of things.
Right. So it was not uncommon in that era for
not at all
big bands like, you know, a well-known acts, records on the charts, played on the radio, whatever, to be playing at things like roller rinks, high schools, and youth centers and stuff like that. Because other than sort of like theaters, there wasn't this whole sort of club,
live
music club culture that really existed at that time.
Yeah, and high school auditoriums already had the equipment, the PA systems, the microphones, and were set up for that kind of thing. So it made sense. And a couple other things that really quickly I'll point out. Led Zeppelin's debut album was released on January 12th, 1969 in America. The mysterious date in question is January 20th, 1969. Mm-hmm. So just 8 days later, at the time Led Zeppelin was touring as the New Yardbirds, or had toured as the New Yardbirds in England anyway. We're not sure if they ever did in the United States. And the other really quick fact to throw in, January 20th, 1969 was also Richard Nixon's inauguration, first inauguration. So that was also happening in the city at the time.
Right.
And it snowed, apparently.
Right. That's right.
So all that happened.
Right. It also apparently was sort of a last minute thing, maybe a fill-in date for something else that might have fallen through, or the tour wasn't, you know, had some dates that they needed to do something, just make a little bit of money.
That's
there was no posters printed or any of that.
No tickets.
No tickets. It was just, you know, pay your $2 at the door and get a handstand.
That's right.
And we should mention here, the guy who promoted the show, who says that it did happen.
Very important.
Is a guy named Barry Richards.
Uh-huh.
And he was a radio DJ.
He was.
And so he felt that radio was the way to promote it anyway. Mm-hmm. So again, there's nothing to hold on to. There's nothing tangible here if that was the way they promoted the show.
And that was a tried and true method for him. You know, he promoted a lot of shows on the radio. A lot of people came out to him and, you know, it just worked for him.
And one other thing I want to say too is, again, you got to put yourself 50 years in the past. Wheaton, Maryland, I'm not even sure how far that is outside of the city, but it's far enough.
Yeah.
That it's, you know, it's not next door like Silver Spring or something like that, right?
Yeah.
It's a little bit out there.
It's a good 20 miles at least.
Probably. Yeah. At that point in time, that might as well have been just like another town.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like, that was far enough away. And this radio station was apparently a low power station that would only have reached like those Maryland suburbs, not even necessarily reaching the DC area. Mm-hmm. So if you had DC fans of Led Zeppelin or people wanted to go, they may not have even heard about show, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it was the use.
Why
from
did
the
it
suburbs.
Only draw 50 people, right? Because of there just wasn't enough time to promote it get people out there. And so anyway, this show is sort of lost to the ages, and it may or may not have happened. And Jeff Krulik wanted to explore that, and he did this documentary on it. And we're going to discuss a lot of that with him here in this interview. So I think people have enough sense of what we're talking about, right?
I think so.
To be able to get in this conversation.
Yep.
One last thing. He does also mention in the interview that he managed to get to Jimmy Page.
Yes.
And the way he did that was by taking on a freelance gig as one of those red carpet interviewers for the Kennedy Center Honors when Led Zeppelin was part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it for the Extra TV show. You know that show Extra?
Yeah.
Right?
The Extra.
So he took that gig to get proximity to the band and then use that to ask them specifically about Wheaton, Maryland, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah, and he also got in front of Dave Grohl too, and, which is kind of cool.
And one other thing too I want to say to people, although this is a story specifically about one particular show in one particular suburb, I have to think that there's rumors and folklore like this around the country. Because
I would think so too.
You know, this at that era where tours were not as professional as they are now, there's probably lots of cases like this in you know, any town USA where it's like,
right,
this this band played this show and you couldn't believe it, and people don't believe it, yeah. right? And so it's just a, it's a good sort of exploration of the differences in sort of culture, music culture, between today and
yeah.
yesterday.
Absolutely.
Right? So, mm-hmm. okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I hope that's set up enough. Let's hear from Jeff Krulik.
Okay.
Let's play the tape from Sun Cinema. Well, thanks for coming out to Sun Studio. Is that where we are?
That's right.
Sun Cinema in Washington, D.C. We are out of the suburbs. We are out of our element right now, but please listen to our podcast when you get a chance, Rockin' the Suburbs. And it's been a delight here to watch the film with Jeff Krulik.
Really Thank you.
How many times have you seen it now?
150. No. I can't. I was thinking how many times it has screened, and I really don't have a figure, but this is one of the many self-curated screenings that we do, because you know, this is a kind of a special event. We don't do you this is hard to see. This film is not readily available, and I'll tell you why. We don't have the rights to the music, so we've got to keep it kind of quiet. But I really kind of wanted to make the film I wanted to make, and it just turned and it really turned into something way beyond, you know, having to deal with, you know, little things like clearing rights. But it's been fun to kind of do it where you almost have to seek it out, you know, just like the old days. You had to, was hard to see it and hard to find it.
Yeah.
I've convinced myself of that at least.
So you people are lucky to be here. You're the chosen ones. So yeah, exactly. All right. So let's start with this. Some people may know Jeff from Heavy Metal Parking Lot. You've seen that film, right?
Thank you.
And
that I've seen a lot.
Yeah. Classic movie. Yeah. That's readily available, right?
Yes. Yeah. You were asking me about that. Yeah. It's it is available as a DVD, which we still, and also online. A lot of it's on YouTube and, you know, everywhere. Well, there's two places, Vimeo and YouTube.
So we'll get to that in a minute. But I want to ask about, okay, so this film here. So you started with a different premise for this movie, right? Or you were researching something else and it led into this. So tell us that story.
Exactly. Well, you might be able to tell how excited I got when there were photos from the Laurel Pop Festival. And when I almost fainted when Tim Pace told me that he had 16 millimeter film footage of the Laurel Pop Festival, because that's what I was set out to do, was to commemorate the Laurel Pop Festival, do a documentary, you know, called Maryland's Woodstock, which was this, you know, forgotten or unknown, shall we say, pop festival that took place 1 month before Woodstock. Of course, if you were there, you knew about it, but it was something I was fascinated by, the, you know, how this came to be. I will say, see, I wasn't around for any of this. I was 8 in 1969. So this is just motivated. Okay. So we're in the same boat, you know, we have to research and find out. And really that's what I've been fortunate to do with a lot of my work, and in this one in particular. But I really started out to do something different about the Laurel Pop Festival. But, you know, arguably Led Zeppelin, you know, became my hook, or was a significant hook with even Maryland's Woodstock, since they headlined one of the two nights. But when I trace the arc of Led Zeppelin, you know, through, you have this show where they're opening for The Who, imagine that, at Meriwether Post. And then actually at this first alleged concert. But when I went into that Wheaton Youth Center, I just went in there one day and I was floored at how the place hadn't changed. It was frozen in time. It looked like it did the day it opened in 1963. So I felt, wow, this can really help tell the story. This building can almost become a character. And that's pretty much how it then changed into my focus was then into the building and the time period almost, and really the emergence of the rock concert industry, using Led Zeppelin as my hook and thread. I was fascinated with the history of the concert industry, and that pretty much was really what was going to be at the core. And clearly something like from this time period, I mean, nobody really had cameras or were documenting things like this. And so that was a great challenge to nowadays everything's documented.
It's not like when you started researching this, that this rumor, this about Led Zeppelin playing at Wheaton Youth Center, like just started then. I mean, this must have been something that had been sort of bubbling up in the DC area for quite some time, right?
Not really.
Oh. All right.
No. But I think it was.
So you originated this rumor?
Not at all. Okay. No. All right. If it was definitely folklore. Somewhat, you know, or a good story, anecdotally told and passed down through, you know, Facebook, or I don't even know Facebook, whatever, or just people who were
tablets, things like
that. Yeah, yeah, just you know, but kind of Mark put it in his book, and that's the first time it really got publicly imprinted. Otherwise, it was just like being, you know, passed down or told to, you know, somebody knew somebody who heard that kind of thing. But there was certainly no documentation anywhere or reference to it. In fact, I mean, Mark published the book in like the mid-90s, late-90s. And then, you know, clearly when the internet took root and websites started putting chronologies of Led Zeppelin, their tour, that kind of would make it in there, but you still didn't have any proof that it happened. You just took people's word for it. Now, Led Zeppelin's actual official tour chronology listed it just as, oh yeah, it was a concert, what have you. But after all this got underway and we got the film going and some publicity and reporters called the webmaster for Led Zeppelin, it's now listed as unconfirmed rumor. They've changed it. So this has had that kind of effect. But there's a book that just came out by there's a guy named Dave Lewis who puts out the website, if you're familiar with that, if you're a Led Zeppelin fan or fanatic. And I'm not, but I can go into that. I mean, I like them, but the people that really are big, true, long-term fans, there's this a website called Tight But Loose, a publication, a magazine, Tight But Loose. Dave Lewis and Mike Tremaglio, they did something called Evenings with Led Zeppelin. It's a book that's been published, and they have this listed as like the Loch Ness of all phantom concerts. So it is referenced, you know, even at that level.
Mm-hmm. One thing I was thinking as I was watching this film a couple times, what did you learn about human memory through all this?
Yeah, memory is a funny thing. I mean, think about it. I mean, I keep asking people to remember something from 50 years ago. And I, you know, it's hard to remember something from, you know, last month sometimes. And I wish, I'm very envious of friends of mine who wrote down, you know, all the concerts that they went to or kept journals because, and I'm lucky to have ticket stubs. These days, you don't really even have that. But I still wish I wish I had a better memory. So I have a lot of, you know, understanding for people that don't. And people keep wanting me to, you know, ask Led Zeppelin like I'm really going to be able to do that, you know, with more pointed questions about this. And why would they have any, I mean, it's just trying to remember anything. And their career was just, you know, much more than this. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So I think it's so fascinating.
I kind of strayed a bit from your question because I really don't have a hard answer for that. Mine's getting more and more challenged. So I really understand why it's hard to conjure up certain memories. Yeah.
Follow up question I have. What have you learned about memory? It's an easy joke. Okay.
Good.
So let's go.
I set myself
so
up.
So here's
for
the
that.
Thing I'm fascinated by is that the concert industry was different was much different back then, right? So obviously, you know, you focus on Meriwether Post Pavilion and venues like that existed, but there was no, there was none of this sort of like middle band of venues that exist now, like your 930 Club and your Black Cat and all that kind of stuff, right? So bands, major bands like this, and you documented many of them, played at youth centers, community centers, Falls Church, where Patrick lives, right?
Amen.
No yeah. kidding.
Yeah. Yes, did you go? Right. Did you go to the Falls
well,
Church?
Well, I'll tell you guys something very interesting. I once scored 49 points in that gym that we saw at the Falls Church Community Center, and Howard Herman was probably there.
That's
so
neat. Really?
Kind of the highlight of my youth. But yeah, we heard those same stories about, oh, Springsteen played there, and you know, there are all right. those rumors like in high school that and the Stooges and Bob Seger and all these people that played there. But yeah, it
seems
it was a totally different thing
by today's standards, yeah. right? But that's
well, that's what
that
really
industry,
I wanted
right?
to tell that story just yeah. as much as I wanted to, yeah. you know, prove that Led Zeppelin did indeed play there. It was more about the idea that I wanted to prove or at least create a legacy for the fact that, you know, the concert industry as we know it today, this really, you know, buttoned down corporate, you know, juggernaut, you know, machine really came from this Wild West frontier where anything goes, and bands that we now know as iconic had humble roots starting in places like a gymnasium near where you grew up.
Mm-hmm. Is there anybody, Jeff, who you wish you could have interviewed for the film but weren't able to do?
Well, every other member of Led Zeppelin, you know, who'd have thunk that they were going to be here in Washington, D.C.?
That was awesome.
You know,
yeah.
weeks before I was to premiere.
Did you specifically finagle that extra TV gig just so you could talk to Led Zeppelin?
I'm like, I'll tell you, when I heard that they were coming, I'm like, ugh, how am I going to do this? What's going to happen? And my initial reaction was just, you know, fear and run away, because I knew this is such really going to be, I'm either going to get it or it's going to be a lost opportunity. And I've been fortunate to do some television freelance, such as for TV shows like Extra, who haven't called me since. But when I got this job...
Why is he asking all these questions yeah, about Wheaton? Yeah.
He had an agenda.
Right. When I got this job, and it was freelance, and I knew what I was doing, and that it was somewhat of it was a small risk, because I knew that this... Their demographic was not Led Zeppelin. And I also know what happens is this stuff just gets turned into, you know, a soundbite. But I was going to be really toast if the producer came. Because if there was a producer that I had to shadow, I wasn't going to be able to go rogue. And I really, when I knew I was on my own, I'm like, yes. But I had to clearly deliver something for them that was they were going to be able to use. And which I did, and I had to stay put in where they assign you. But I had John Hine, who I made Heavy Metal Parking Lot with, over. He was shooting over. He was behind us
yeah,
with a camera shooting
great.
Down. And I had a digital voice recorder clutched next to the microphone. But also the crew was great. Everybody was in on it who I was working with. So they were able to, we got to strip the audio from it that was the professional audio. I mean, because again, you kind of, I gave them what they needed, but I also knew the arrangement is a lot of this stuff just, you know, gets discarded. And I also knew that a lot of times major stars, you know, they have handlers, and you might be lucky to, if only to get two questions.
Right.
And I'm like, I can't take the chance. I got to go right in and ask them. So I did that. I did three questions. And then I just shut up. I didn't say anything because I wanted the other guys. I wanted the yeah. other members of Led Zeppelin. And my cameraman thought I, you know, just froze. So he asked a question. And I'm thinking, oh, no. Because then I forget. I was sitting here watching. I should post that on YouTube because it's a whole longer sequence that
uh-huh.
we have.
Uh-huh.
But it was still great to get Jimmy Page, no doubt. And I was fine until about, I don't know, like all of a sudden, I got a little tongue-tied. At the end, because my head was like, oh my God, I'm talking, this is great. I'm getting Jimmy Page to give me exactly what I wanted.
The question.
He wasn't going to know. I didn't expect him to, you know, deliver the definitive answer, but it was just such a lucky break. And so, unfortunately, since the other members fanned out and I couldn't leave where I was positioned, you know, I didn't get them. So that's who I wish I had gotten to. I heard John Paul Jones has a great memory.
Since this has come out, have more people come forward and said, I was at that show, or given you any other kind of evidence?
Yes.
Okay.
Evidence, you have definitive but no proof? Hard proof. Oh. None.
I
no,
we're
going to
break that story right here.
I know. No, it's what's happened is there's been some, you know, more people who've said, but nothing that I haven't already heard, you know, and nothing. I mean, but I still want to do a little more with this somehow, and I don't know, write something or do something with Rock in the Suburbs. You know, we'll find
Absolutely.
Out. We'll go out there and try to. You know, fan out and try to find people. I need to find like a diary entry. Somebody has to or a high school newspaper reference. It's got to be that obscure, I think, because everything else we've just, I don't know. It's a weird little story that I made a feature.
Was anyone here at the show in Wheaton? We checked that. Yeah, I thought it was worth a shot.
Anybody might as well check.
Anybody go to other concerts at the Wheaton Youth Center, anything like it? Another thing that's kind of fun is the high school concerts.
Yeah.
I mean, I really love that story because there were a lot of them. And, more than we certainly presented here. And I just love that. But again, it was just all part of that wide open frontier.
And the thing you've said in interviews I've read with you is that that wasn't just a DC thing. I mean, that's all across the country, right? That was how tours were booked back then.
That you could possibly do something like that. You could get to an artist and get, or that they were being put into places. Like, for instance, the Capitol Center was built in 73, opened in 73, and then Cellar Door Concerts was doing, you know, had the contract to present concerts there. But prior to that, you know, you were still putting bands into the Kennedy Center. You know, that's right. Another thing.
Right.
I mean, who knew that? I mean, unless you were there, there's not really a history. So that these were the kind of things that I wanted to really kind of put out there because I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah. And I think part of it, too, is the evolution of technology and sound systems. Like you didn't have a sound system to power a 20,000 or 15,000 seat arena. You know, you had your high school auditorium and you build a bigger high school and you build a slightly bigger sound system, like James Brown needed a bigger, you know, arena to play in. But that's a big part of it, too. Just the, you know, the evolution of touring and all that stuff. You didn't take your own sound system. It was whatever they had there when you went on the road until the Dead, you know, essentially built their own and sort of went that way. So that was a big part of it, I think, too.
I wanted to just have this microcosm of what was going on around the country. Maybe that's why I've been fortunate to screen this in, around the country, even in Australia.
Wow.
I didn't go, but, you know, I sent it and England, I think.
Yeah. Anyway. It may have happened. It may not have.
May not. Yeah. I don't know. You're right.
All right, so there you go. So that was cool. That was really fun. We thank Jeff. It was a great time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a crazy story.
It is. And, you know, I'm so fascinated by memory and documentation. Yeah. Like, were you one of those people that used to keep track of things you went to and write them down or not?
No.
I never was
either. I always
either.
Say that I'm going to do that, and then I don't do it.
Yeah.
And I feel like I have a pretty good memory, but as happens to most people, you know, as you get older, it fades more and more, right? Tomorrow we're going to play more of the recording from this Q&A, and I think you're going to like it because we took audience questions.
We did.
And, you know, as typically happens, they ask better questions than we do.
Yeah.
Now, again, our thanks to Sun Cinema for helping us out here. Our thanks to Jeff Kulik for screening the film.
Mm-hmm.
And
if you were at that show, get in touch because we really need the evidence.
There you go. All right. So let's get out of here. It is Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow. You ever have this happen, like the whole notion of like phantom memories where you think like you did something, but then you're not 100% sure that you really did?
Yes, I do.